I want to tell you a story of rise and fall, collapse and renewal. It is a story set in deep time, and it is meant to explain why so many people right now feel a strange mix of grief and awakening in the same breath. It is a story about memory, how it breaks, how it survives, and how it returns. Before we begin, I need to define netism as plainly as I can, because the rest of this story will keep circling back to it. Netism is a modern word for an old structure that has repeated across human history. The word comes from three roots, and each root points to a different part of the same reality. The first root is the net, meaning interconnection. Life affects life, minds affect minds, and events echo through relationships. Nothing stays isolated for long, even when it looks isolated on the surface. The second root is niter, meaning functional forces, or operating principles in nature and consciousness. Ancient cultures often pictured these forces as gods, because stories make forces easy to remember. In this framework, these forces function as laws and dynamics, rather than personalities demanding devotion. The third root is netum, meaning integration. Systems fragment under stress, and systems also move back toward coherence when the right conditions return. That return to order shows up in ecosystems, in bodies, in communities, and in civilizations. A person who grows into this way of seeing does not collect dogma. They learn patterns, test them in real life, and learn how to move with cycles rather than fighting them. They keep their mind clear, keep their attention on what lasts, and learn to watch the turning of events without panic. As that steadiness deepens, they stop living only inside appearances and start participating directly in creation, no longer confined by illusion or surface form. With that defined, this story stays inside the current cycle. The larger record runs deeper than what I am about to tell, because earlier cycles saw humanity rise into real complexity, lose continuity through collapse, and climb again. This story follows the cycle we are in now, the one that built the world you woke up in, because it explains what you are feeling and what is opening in front of us. One idea holds the whole story together, and it is simple once you see it. Cycles nest inside other cycles. You can imagine the largest cycle as the background climate of history. It sets long conditions that whole civilizations grow inside. Within that are smaller civilizational waves, periods of organization, expansion, strain, and reset. Within those are generational waves that track roughly the length of a long human life. Within those are the rhythms you live every day through your body and mind. Seasons, hormones, sleep, hunger, attention, emotion. The large turn of the great cycle carries many smaller turnings inside it, and the smaller cycles echo the larger cycle, because the larger cycle sets the boundaries for the smaller ones. History moves like a set of gears, where the slow gear turns the fast gear, and the fast gear carries the daily motion. With that foundation in place, we can now name the rupture that begins our current cycle. Around 12,900 BCE, Earth entered an abrupt climatic event known as the Younger Dryas. Temperatures dropped sharply after a warming trend, and in the netism record, the trigger was a fragmented comet event in the northern hemisphere. The atmosphere filled with dust and burning debris. Wide regions caught fire, sunlight dimmed, and a sudden cold phase locked in. For the people alive then, it did not feel like climate variability. It felt like the sky turned against them. That cold phase held for roughly 12 centuries, then released around 9,700 BCE, as rapid warming returned, ice sheets destabilized, glaciers collapsed, Meltwater poured into the seas, and shorelines moved fast enough to be noticed inside a human lifetime. Across the full arc from peak ice age to the early Holocene, sea level rose by roughly 120 meters. That number matters because it tells you how much land disappeared. Coastal plains, river deltas, and low basins went under, and whole regions that once held people, paths, and settlements became seabed. You can still see the ghost of this in specific places. In the North Sea, what is now water was once a wide inhabited landscape known as Doggerland, connecting Britain to continental Europe. In Southeast Asia, a vast connected region known as Sundaland broke apart as waters rose, leaving the island chains we recognize today. These were not distant geological abstractions. These were homelands, and losing a homeland is never only a physical event, it is a wound to continuity. When coastlines move, food systems break. When food systems break, populations migrate. When migrations stack up, conflict rises. When enough regions destabilize at the same time, trade collapses. And when trade collapses, specialized knowledge collapses with it. A world can fall without a single final battle, because it falls when the links between people, places, and skills snap at once. Many later cultures carried a memory of this rupture. Flood stories appear across Mesopotamia, South Asia, East Asia, the Americas, and the Pacific. Some describe water rising, some describe darkness, some describe fire from the sky, and some describe a remnant that survives and rebuilds. The names change across cultures, yet the structure stays recognizable. As a world ends, a small remainder continues forward, leading into a much simpler world. This new start after the Great Fall is what we call the Great Forgetting. The Great Forgetting is not a metaphor meant to sound pretty. It is what happens when continuity breaks. Knowledge survives through living systems. Teachers train students, tools are maintained, language stays stable, and places exist where people can practice for years without being interrupted by hunger and danger. Remove those supports, and the chain snaps. After the Younger Dryas rupture, survival became the full occupation of life. People regrouped into smaller bands, moved to higher ground, followed animals, and learned to live with less. Skills that require long training faded first, because they are the hardest to preserve when every day is triage. Precision measurement thinned, large-scale engineering thinned, complex medicine thinned, wide networks of shared knowledge thinned. This is what cast back to the Stone Age means in real terms. It describes function. It describes what a species becomes when complex systems fracture and people must live with what they can carry, what they can hunt, and what they can rebuild by hand. Even so, fragments survived because fragments are what memory becomes when it is wounded. A chant survived in the shape of sound. A symbol survived in the shape of a mark. A star pattern survived in the shape of a story told under a night sky. A ritual gesture survived in the shape of a movement repeated, because it still felt true. Over generations, the operating logic behind those fragments thinned. What once worked as applied knowledge became sacred story. And sacred story became myth, and myth became a way of storing a damaged archive until people were strong enough to open it again. Another kind of forgetting ran alongside the loss of technique. Trauma narrows awareness, hunger shortens time, and danger pulls attention into the next hour, the next day, the next season. People still carried the net, because the net does not disappear. Yet their perception of it went quiet under stress. It is hard to feel interconnection when your nervous system is locked in survival, and it is hard to keep long memory alive when your life is reduced to the next meal and the next safe place to sleep. As conditions shifted again, the early Holocene brought more stable seasons. Settlements scaled, agriculture took root, towns grew, and time opened up again for observation, training, and rebuilding. This is where the record places the first major return of coherent knowledge in our cycle, described through a name, a tomb. A tomb functions here as a marker of restoration, meaning the return of order into human awareness in a usable form. It did not happen in a single day, and it did not come from the mouth of a single teacher. It unfolded as a multi-generational recovery, a slow rethreading of skills, attention, and meaning. People began to remember in practical ways, because practical remembering is what makes long memory possible. They watched the sun again with care, tracked seasons with patience, rebuilt calendars, learned how to store food, and learned how to build in stone again. You can see the edge of this return in early ceremonial and settlement sites, places where communities gathered and built for something larger than immediate survival. That detail matters because it shows the difference between mere endurance and true recovery. Endurance keeps you alive. Recovery gives you time, meaning, and shared structure again. The impulse toward order returned before the empire rose, because memory always rebuilds from the inside out. Out of that recovery stream comes another name, Heka. Heka is a borrowed term. In ancient Egyptian language, it refers to activated power through word, ritual, and force of life. In this framework, Heka names a disciplined practice of coherence. Breath, sound, intention, and sequence used to regulate the subtle layer of life, which then shapes material outcomes. This is not presented as superstition. It is presented as a craft, rooted in the observation that bodies hold pattern, communities hold pattern, places hold pattern, and pattern responds to tuning. Early Heka work moved through networks rather than governments. Small learning centers formed in protected regions, and training emphasized three operating laws, because those three laws are what keep a recovering civilization from collapsing back into chaos. Interconnection, meaning actions ripple through the whole field. Balance, meaning life moves through cycles of growth and dissolution, and systems stay healthy when they stay aligned with those cycles. Preservation, meaning wisdom survives through careful transmission, careful ethics, and continuity across generations. As those networks spread, civilization reseeded itself from the ground up. Calendars stabilized, agriculture scaled, healing methods spread, builders learned proportion and alignment again, and communities developed rituals that regulated fear, grief, and social fracture. By roughly 5,000 to 3,000 BCE, complex civilizations rose in multiple regions, including Mesopotamia, the Nile Valley, the Indus region, and early China. In this record, these civilizations were not sudden miracles. They were the public surface of a long recovery process that began when the world stopped shaking long enough for memory to take root again. One place becomes a central anchor in this telling. Kemet, the Nile Valley, later called Egypt. Egypt's environment supported continuity through a reliable flood cycle and a geography that buffered its core from constant invasion. Stability gave memory a place to live, and when memory has a place to live, it becomes capable of building beyond the next season. By the early dynastic period, around 3100 BCE, Egypt already carried a mature symbolic system, including writing, architecture, cosmology, priesthoods, and governance. Through the Old Kingdom, roughly 2686 to 2181 BCE, that maturity became monumental. At the center sat Ma'at, meaning truth, balance, and cosmic order. It functions as ethics built into infrastructure, because in this model, a society stays healthy when truth remains stable, justice stays functional, and leadership serves the whole field rather than feeding itself. When falsehood becomes normal and power detaches from responsibility, fracture follows as predictably as rot in wood. Heka also appears explicitly in Egypt, expressed through chants, names, and ritual sequences meant to regulate harmony for the land, the harvest, the dead, and the living. Sound and symbol became tools of coherence. Architecture became a form of instruction, and monuments encoded alignment with solar and stellar cycles. Sacred geometry made invisible structure visible, giving people a way to remember order with their eyes and hands, even when their inner stability wavered. In the Netism chronology, Egypt's monument tradition reaches deeper than the mainstream timeline allows. Some structures on the Giza Plateau belong to inheritance and restoration rather than first invention, and later dynasties maintained and adapted what already existed, preserving fragments of older technical and metaphysical knowledge through ritual and stone. In this telling, this period stands as a high point of reconstruction, where memory is strong enough to build monuments and stable enough to transmit a complex worldview across generations. Then a second contraction begins, driven by power rather than climate. As states consolidated across the world, incentives shifted. Control over labor, land, and narrative became the central prize, and teachings that strengthened direct perception and inner sovereignty created limits on centralized authority. Leaders who equated stability with obedience treated those limits as threats, and over time a method spread that many civilizations rediscovered independently because it works too well. Principles were externalized and personified. Functional forces became gods with images and names. Once a principle becomes a being to worship, access to that principle becomes mediated. A person stops learning a law through practice and starts requesting favors through devotion, and a population becomes governable through ritual, priesthood, and fear. The first durable images of gods matter here, because once a symbol becomes standardized and repeated, meaning becomes fixed. Fixed meaning can be administered, and administered meaning can be used to control. Temples became economic centers. Priesthoods became bureaucracies. Orthodoxy became a gate. Political legitimacy fused with divine mandate, and dissent became spiritual rebellion. The deeper training did not disappear, because real methods rarely vanish completely. It fragmented, and it hid, and it survived in pieces, healing rites, astronomy, geometry, timing, ethical formulas. The integrated structure that made those pieces coherent became rare, and a practice once aimed at direct knowledge became a public ritual aimed at compliance. This is where myth becomes both preservation and instrument, because myth can carry a principle across centuries, and myth can also be used to justify who gets to rule. The Horus cycle becomes a clear example. Osiris is killed and dismembered. Isis gathers what was scattered and restores him through ritual reconstruction, and the tradition describes a brief interval of reanimation. Horus is conceived through an origin framed as divine technique and cosmic authority, and Horus then embodies rightful continuity after rupture, the restoration of order, and the claim that kingship aligns with Ma'at. This structure repeats across the world because it solves the same problem again and again: how to authorize power after crisis. A child with an extraordinary origin carries a mandate beyond ordinary lineage. A community rallies around that mandate, and a political order stabilizes inside a cosmic story. You can see the motif across traditions with different symbols. In Roman Mithraic religion, Mithras emerges from the rock, stone-born, and already carrying the tools of his function, placing authority outside ordinary birth and family line as initiation replaces ancestry. In Phrygian myth, Attis is conceived without sexual union when an almond falls into Nana's lap, bypassing human mechanics and framing the figure as an event of nature and destiny. In Buddhist tradition, Queen Maya conceives after a dream in which a white elephant enters her side, with the conception framed as the descent of a being already carrying world-scale purpose. In Aztec tradition, Huitzilopochtli is conceived when a ball of feathers falls upon Coatlicuv as she performs ritual sweeping, and the birth arrives ready for conflict, framed as solar order overcoming chaos. Different lands and languages, yet the same structural engineering appears. Extraordinary origin, cosmic authorization, conflict with disorder, restoration of balance, and the transfer of legitimacy to a community. These stories preserve real principles, and they also become tools of governance once the principle is no longer taught directly. The number patterns follow the same logic. 12 maps time through months, lunar cycles, and divisions of the sky, and 12 becomes a way to compress cosmic order into a structure people can remember and organize around. Traditions turn that cosmic count into councils, guardians, gates, companions, and divisions around a central law. This is how fragments survive across centuries of narrowing, because the symbol can remain even when the key is lost. Over long time, the narrowing deepens. Empires compete, priesthoods harden, public life keeps ritual, while direct perception becomes rare and collapses occur inside the larger cycle as systems rise, strain, fracture, and reassemble. On the scale of a long human life, roughly 80 to 100 years, societies move through a repeatable four-part pulse of rebuilding and institutional strength, cultural and spiritual awakening, unraveling and fragmentation, then crisis that forces a reset. The pattern repeats because humans inherit systems, challenge them, break them, and rebuild them. And the rhythm of memory and power keeps playing out in a species that forgets and remembers in waves. Right now, the world sits inside a crisis turn, and you do not need charts to feel it. Institutions strain, trust collapses, people fracture into tribes, and the planet shows stress through soil, water, climate, and biodiversity. The nervous system of civilization runs hot, and when a civilization runs hot for long enough, people start searching for something that can hold under pressure. This is also where remembering returns. People begin describing reality in networks because networks are what you see when you stop pretending you are separate. Ecology makes interdependence undeniable. Trauma science maps how survival states shut down perception. Meditation and breathwork spread across cultures and languages. More people report experiences that fit a connected model of mind and event, including synchronicity, intuitive knowing, shared emotional fields, and timing that feels guided. The net becomes visible again, not as a theory to debate, as a lived pattern that keeps showing itself when attention is steady enough to notice. That is the opening this work is built for. Netism exists to give structure to remembering and to keep it practical, not as a belief to collect, as training, ethics, community, and design. The future piece matters because ideas do not hold under pressure unless they live somewhere real. Land matters, water matters, soil matters, shelter matters, And daily rhythms matter because those are the containers that either stabilize people or break them. The way people handle conflict matters. The way power is distributed matters. A coherent community becomes a proof because it becomes a living reference in a world trained toward extraction. The project is simple to say and hard to do. Create a place that lives in alignment with cycles, with the net, and with Earth. Build systems that regenerate rather than drain. Develop technology that works with natural order, meaning energy systems that respect ecosystems, materials that return safely to the land, agriculture that increases fertility over time, and architecture designed for health, attention, and climate. This is not nostalgia. It is engineering guided by reality rather than ego. Netism is a name, and Heka is a name, and the names are tools for conversation. The work underneath them is older than the vocabulary and newer than any single institution, because it restarts every time humans remember what coherence feels like. If you have been searching for a path that stays grounded without collapsing into fantasy, and that stays free without collapsing into control, there is a real lane here. It begins with learning principles, practicing skills, testing what works, holding yourself to truth, and building alongside other people who can do the same. A cycle changes when enough people stop feeding fragmentation and start feeding coherence. And that is the story of this age, still being written in real time.